Oof.
All right. It's rainy out there.
Yeah, that is rainy.
How are you combating the rain? What are you doing to keep yourself?
Not going out in the rain.
I mean, I was more thinking like, you know, keep it happy, keep life enjoyable.
Oh, sometimes. No, I'm just depressed and I lean into it.
Lean into depression.
I mean, you know, life has seasons.
Sure, it does. Today's a rainy one.
Today's a rainy, where you are today.
Yeah. Well, hey, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. This is Pastor David Bowser. I'm trying to do Patrick's line and I don't know it.
It's tough. He's not here today.
With me, as always, is Pastor David Bowser. That's what I know. How are you doing, Patrick, who's not here?
Right.
And also with me, Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
All right. Yeah, Patrick, out with some sick kiddos. Sounds like the whole Nazarov clan is down with a variety of illnesses. So praying for exorcisms upon their home of all the
we know a guy.
That's right. We do. I don't think he does flu exorcisms. I don't think that's in his repertoire.
Well, we haven't asked, to be fair.
True. That's a good point. Yeah. I appreciate you reminding me of that, keeping my boundaries appropriate. Thank you for that. So it's just Elise and I. So hopefully you'll enjoy this podcast. We got some fun stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, interesting stuff to talk about.
Right. Everybody just turned it off.
No, Patrick.
No. No, thank you.
We're like gearing up for like bad weather this weekend, so we'll see what happens here.
Yeah, I just made a panic grocery order pickup.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
What did you panic by?
Stuff to make cookies, obviously.
Of course.
And chips.
Chips and cookies.
What else do you panic by?
I'm iced in with no power. I need chips and the ability
snacks.
To make cookies.
Like, I've got sustenance food. That's fine, but I don't want to be mad. Like, I want to be happy in my isolation.
Sure. I mean, if you're going to get snowed in with snacks.
Right.
Sure.
Like, make it a whole thing.
Yeah. To be clear, we're not going to get snowed in.
We might get iced in.
We're not going to get
snowed in. Yeah.
This will come out on Monday. By Monday, we will know what happened. So, listeners, wherever you are, if you even have power to listen to this, we hope that you're okay. And we hope that you stayed warm and all this stuff. And we'll go from there. I got a new story for us.
Okay.
This is a fun one. I'm pretty excited about this. Here's our... let me ask you this first. How do you feel about cows?
Cows are great.
Yeah?
You get to love them twice.
Okay. You like to snuggle the cow
and
eat the cow?
They're awesome and you can eat them. Yeah.
It's a win-win.
Yeah.
Okay. I have never snuggled a cow. Have you snuggled a cow?
No, I haven't. Not a big one. A little one.
Like a calf?
No, like a Highland cow.
Oh, like one
gotten
of those.
Gotten a little snuggly with a Highland cow.
They're really fluffy,
small ones. Yeah, those are cool.
So they don't get very big. I've only seen them on the internet. I don't have size.
Yeah, no, I don't think they get much bigger than like the height of this table that we're sitting at.
Which is an average size table, just for our little listeners.
Just normal. It's a normal table.
We're not at a high top.
No, right. Yeah, it's not a bar table.
Well, all right, here we go. Austrian researchers, this is from just a couple days ago, January 20th of this year. Austrian researchers document the first case of a cow using a tool.
I saw this. Yeah? It scratches itself.
It does. It uses a little stick and scratches its back. A Swiss brown cow, how now brown cow, named Veronica. I don't know how to say that with a Swiss accent.
Veronica?
Yeah, Veronica. Yeah, I mean, Veronica, but like...
It would be a Veronica.
It would be.
was
documented
tool
using tools the first time such a behavior has been noted in bovines. So researchers in Austria detailed this unusual case of the first cow using tools, specifically sticks and brushes, to scratch herself. This team from the University of Veterinary Medicine in Vienna said Veronica, a pet Swiss brown cow belonging to Carinthia resident... Carinthia resident... Vitgar Vigel, that's definitely
right. It's doing
great.
That's
definitely it. Has been holding sticks in her mouth to scratch her body for years. Look at that. She's very cute. You can look this up online. Look up Veronica's or cow using a tool. It probably works. I don't know. That might be some like AI generated junk of like a cow with a hammer. But
yeah,
you'll find it. Yeah, it's very adorable. And so she's got a little stick, and it's like you've seen monkeys and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But apparently this counts as using a simple tool.
Yeah. Is this about to make us feel bad about our burgers?
I mean, people have been trying to make me feel bad about my bacon for a long time.
I haven't stuck yet.
Yeah. So
and pigs can solve mazes. Yeah. So.
I mean, listen. Pigs can solve mazes that I can't solve.
Pigs can use talking buttons.
They still can't stop me from thinking they're delicious.
Pigs have language.
They don't have human language.
And I love them for breakfast.
They can't talk to me.
No, with the little talking buttons things where
they
communicate.
That?
Yeah, pigs will do it. Yeah.
Do we know? Is that like, do they know that they're saying what they're saying?
There's a lot of debate, I think, currently about whether or not like the whole
between
language
people who
button
love bacon and people who are like
vegans.
No, you're not supposed to eat bacon.
Yeah. always. There's a lot of debate just in general.
Okay, sure.
Pigs are a hot topic.
breaking news, pigs.
Pigs. but about whether or not the language buttons that animals use to communicate is like actual communication.
Yeah. Is that legit? Yeah.
I don't know. What they're saying. Yeah. I think in some cases it probably is, and in some cases it's just they've been like rewarded enough for that behavior that they're just repeating that behavior.
Yeah. I do think like the monkey sign language or gorilla sign language, like that to me is more conducive of language. And pigs have hooves, so cannot sign, so still good to eat.
Is that the line? Is it they have hooves?
Well, they can't sign,
so we can eat them.
I'm saying sign language is language. Yeah. They can't do that. Yeah. So I'm still.
Do you have any animal that you just like will not eat? Like it's kind of a no go for you.
That's an interesting question. I mean, not on moral grounds.
Okay.
On like I think it's gross grounds. Mm-hmm. There's probably someone's like I don't like sushi.
Oh, okay. But I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's not like a moral objection to sushi.
You're just not a fan. Yeah.
I mean, if I were in a foreign, I've tried some weird things before. I've tried Rocky Mountain oysters. I've tried. Things like that. So, like, I'll try things.
Yeah.
Especially, like, in a culture, like, if this is, like, the culturally acceptable thing.
Yeah, sure.
I'm probably, like, if it was, like, I don't know, here's a dog, like, I'm probably not super psyched about that.
It's a little cringe, but.
But that's only because of the cultural assumptions that we put on dogs, not because of anything else. They're just, they're an animal like a pig. They can't sign language, so why can't I, why can't I eat that?
So why can't I eat it? Nice.
Yeah. Anyway, there we go.
This is heartwarming.
Hi, evolutionary thoughts on our eating habits with Pastor David Bowser. Can't sign language.
Right.
I don't know. In defense of that argument, I can't sign language, so I guess I'm fair game.
Right. So. Yeah. We better start learning. We have the potential to sign language.
That's true.
Though,
yeah. It's the potential to.
Potential.
Yeah. Dogs and pigs do not have the potential to sign.
Right. So they're fine.
Also chickens, they're good. You can't
chicken,
can't
yeah, a chicken can also live without its head, so I feel like that should be an automatic, like you should be eaten
if it lives without its head.
Right.
Eat that.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, hey, so as of recording, this was this past Sunday, as of release this will be like 2 Sundays ago. I think that's how time works.
That's a pretty tight timeline for us, honestly. That's
somewhere in that way. So there's a lot of stuff going on in Minneapolis, in the larger state of Minnesota, I should say, particularly surrounding ICE and immigration and custom enforcement and their use of force. This is a lot of reaction to the shooting of Verne Good that happened now a couple of weeks ago. So there have been protests. There have been a variety of reactions against ICE coming in as a federal force, questions of whether this is a violation of states' rights, of local governments' rights, questions of state governments and local governments being accused by the federal government of working against and preventing ICE from carrying out their so-called responsibilities, right? Lots of stuff is going on. We are not an expert on that particular situation by any means. I'm not an ICE expert. I'm not a Minneapolis expert, any of that. I've been to Minneapolis. That's the extent of my knowledge.
Yeah.
Have you been to Minneapolis?
I've not.
No, Mall of
not
America.
On purpose. I mean, like, I
did you accidentally end up in Minneapolis?
Wound up in Minneapolis. No. Like, I've taken a flight that is laid in Minneapolis.
You have... landed on the ground in Minneapolis.
Yes, I've not been outside the airport.
Fair
so.
Enough. Yeah. Mall of America is great. Downtown Minneapolis.
We love a mall.
Cool. I mean, Mall of America, I will say, I did not hold up high because I was like, is this going to be a mall? It was cooler than I thought it was going to be.
Okay.
Like, there's like roller coasters inside of it. There's like.
That part's cool.
There's a giant, like not just a Lego store. There's like a giant Lego store. Mm-hmm. There's a like all sorts of. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Well.
Anyway, so it is a big mall. In the end, it is a big mall, but it's a cool big mall. Yeah. So we are going to talk because this past Sunday, there was an event where some protesters who were protesting ICE's involvement in goings-on around Minneapolis entered into a church service, a worship service of a congregation to protest ICE in the midst of this church service.
Mm-hmm.
What we are reading, it's kind of complicated. Depending on who you read, gets a different perspectives of this. It seems to be that there is a pastor on staff of this congregation who is also serving as a director of a field office for ICE in Minneapolis. So it seems to be that that was the connection, is that there was a pastor. Even like reading like PBS and other things like that, it was unclear as whether or not they confirmed that this was the same person, but they have the same name, and it appears that they have the same biographical data, so it's probably the same person.
Yeah.
That's kind of where we're at. So that was why they went into this particular church, right? It wasn't just like, we're going to pick a random church and barge in and yell about ICE. It's like, we have here a leader of the ICE organization. We are protesting ICE. And so the protesters came in the midst of their worship service, understandably disrupted their worship service and had this protest. They were chanting things. This is coming from an article that we're going to talk about from Christianity Today. But they say that they were chanting things like justice for Renee Good and hands up, don't shoot, and other chants like that you would expect from this kind of protest as we've seen. So that's what happened. There was a protest in a church. The church service was disrupted. It was because there was maybe a staff person who was in charge of ICE in this region. I think that's fairly confirmable, but I can't find it here to say like, yes, yeah, absolutely.
Do we know if it's the pastor that was leading the worship service they did?
Yeah. So what I was reading, particularly through PBS and BBC, was that it was unclear if that pastor was present at the time of this protest.
Yeah. Okay.
That seems to be unclear. But here's the headline of this particular opinion piece. It's very much an opinion piece written by Bonnie. I'm going to guess that's Christian. K-R-I-S-T-I-A-N.
Sure.
Yeah. Bonnie Christian, who's a staff editor at Christianity Today. And the headline for her opinion piece is "Protesting in Church is Wrong," period. She doesn't. That's just a period. She doesn't write the word period. but I'm saying it for dramatic effect. "Protesting in Church is Wrong," period. "So is immigration theater," period. And the argument that she's going to make, and there's a variety of pieces, parts of this argument that I don't think she articulates particularly well. I think she leaves herself open to a lot of critique because she doesn't fully address some issues and I think reacts very emotionally to some other issues that don't necessarily address what's going on here. But the thrust of it, which I can at least get behind for the point of our conversation, is that both of these things are bad. But essentially her argument is we should not treat church as a place to protest, and what ICE is doing in Minneapolis is wrong. Like, both of these things are wrong, and we shouldn't just assume, oh, ICE is doing this horrible thing, therefore I'm allowed to do this thing that I wouldn't do otherwise, in this case, protest in church.
Yeah. Right?
The thrust is I need to keep my moral standard, my moral objectivity, even when the other side is not, I guess, in some ways.
Yeah.
So let me just pause there. And I guess ask the question, like, when we think about the broader context of church, how do we feel about the notion of anyone, not even necessarily a protest, but like anyone coming in and disrupting that space? Like, what would be our emotional reaction to that happening?
I mean, I think it would be jarring, right? Yeah. Like, to be fair, for the, I feel like I'm probably going to take a little bit of a different stance than she does in this.
That's fine.
You know, but
I don't know her, so it's totally fine to disagree.
In perfect fairness to the people in that congregation, that would be super jarring, right?
Right.
To
yes,
think
absolutely.
Like you're showing up for this thing that you show up for probably regularly, right? And it usually goes about the same way.
Yep.
And then it doesn't go that way. And people who are not normally there come in and are disruptive and are chanting things. And, you know, regardless of what the subject matter is, that would probably be startling, scary. And uncomfortable.
Yeah. So I had an experience when I was in campus ministry, when I was in seminary, where we had a relationship with a number of people who were living homeless in the neighborhood, and they would periodically join us for worship. And there was a night where one individual who we had known but did not have a particularly good relationship with came to worship, and one of the leaders suspected that this individual might have a gun on their person, right?
And it's a big deal.
Yeah, and they were not being threatening, right? They were not making threats. They were not being disruptive. But there's this notion that this person might have it, and this person was known for instability, right? They were not unstable in this moment, but they were known for that. And so we had to call the police, and the police had to come in, and it was a whole. I mean, obviously, it's a thing, right? There's an armed person with a room full of people, and just it's a thing. It's very disruptive, right?
Yeah.
And this person was not there protesting.
Yeah.
They had their own mental health challenges and they were facing that. But it is very disrupting to have.
Yeah.
And it's unsettling in the sense of like this place where I thought I could be safe right now comes under threat.
Yeah.
And I think we have to be willing to acknowledge that that is a very uncomfortable place for the worshipers of that context to be. Because even if, you know, the pastor is the leader of this thing, which I think it's fair to say that he is, if he's the director of this field office, even if that's true, the average person in those pews may or may not know that.
Yeah.
May or may not have anything to do with ICE, may or may not agree with what ICE is doing. Right. I don't know this church. I don't know the context of this church. But I just imagine that being a very disruptive thing in the best of circumstances. And this does not seem like the best of circumstances.
Right.
So what do we think about the purpose of protest then? I mean, we've talked about this a little bit on the podcast before, but so we've got this idea of disruptiveness within the church service kind of unsettling us, but let's just think about protest in general. What's its purpose? What's an appropriate place, like leaving the church out of it for the moment, what's its purpose? What's an appropriate way to go about it for us as people of faith, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the purposes of protest is to disrupt, right? At its core, right? Yeah. And, you know, hopefully what you're disrupting is the status quo and harmful practices, right? But, I mean, that is, I would say, an effective protest if it peacefully disrupts something, just in terms of what the point of protest is.
Yeah.
Do I love the idea of protesters barging into a church service?
Sure.
No, I do not. Not as somebody who attends a church, right? Like, no, of course I don't like that. But in terms of just protests in general, I look at that and say, like, yeah, that's not outside of the bounds of, like, an effective or fair protest, you know?
Yeah. But, all right, so should there be anywhere that's out of bounds for a protest? Like, are there any places in our our cultural context that is sacred might even be the right word.
Yeah.
That is sacred to the point of, like, this should be off limits.
I mean, my gut response to that is it depends on what you're protesting and why.
Say
right?
more about that, yeah.
I mean, because you think about, like, what was that group, the church that protests the funerals of
Westboro
Baptist that protests the service members' funerals and stuff like that? It's a very ugly form of protest, you know? So I think I can list all kinds of things that I think should be off limits for that, including those funerals, you know?
I do not want to come down on the side of Westboro Baptist, just to be clear. But I will say they never, to my knowledge, never went into the service.
Right.
Like they were there. They're outside. They're on street corners. Yeah. Like all sorts of things that are gross, and I don't want anything to do with it. But they never went into a service.
Yeah. So, right? I mean, this is different in that way.
And so, I guess, like, that's the question, right? Like, is there, if the protesters had been outside of the church, we aren't having this conversation.
Right.
Right. The conversation is that they went into the sanctuary.
Right.
In the midst of a worship service. And I guess I don't know that it's wrong.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, like, should, as we are people who might engage in process of protest, should there be areas where, like, even as protesters, like, no, that has to be sacred for the good of everybody. That has to be sacred. Like,
I mean, I think about Jesus in the temple with this too, though.
Yeah,
right. Like, that's kind of like a classic moment of
that old chestnut.
Of church protest, right? Like, I mean, obviously, there's a different structure to that religious environment than ours is today.
Yeah,
right?
They're not in a worship service. They're
It looks very different. But I mean, that would be his, you know, environment of worship, right? Mm-hmm. And he was all up in it, from what I understand. And that was a protest or a form of it, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And I mean, maybe you can say he gets a pass because he's the son of God or whatever, you know, but like, it's hard to, like, bring Jesus into it, really, and say, like, well, you know, Jesus could do it, so it's fine.
Yeah. No,
but
I think that's perfectly reasonable.
I do think that there's something to discuss there about, like, there maybe is some biblical precedent for it, you know?
Okay, so let's think about the biblical precedent then, because Jesus is protesting actions that the church, the established religious organization is taking at that moment, right? So yeah, I think if I as pastor were corrupt and were, you know, taking money on the side and we're right, and then a bunch of people came in who knew our community, right, who maybe they were even part of our community, came in and disrupted a service saying, you know, Pastor David is doing, like, this is an outrage, like, he's like, that to me feels different when people break in and they're protesting the actions of the church and of the leader of the church in that particular circumstance. Then here, we're protesting actions of the government that is outside of the church, but we're doing it by coming into the church.
Yeah, maybe I just have a slightly different understanding of what that protest was, because the videos that I saw and the chants that I saw were very much people addressing the pastor's involvement with ICE, you know, and like, that is the outrage part of it, that this pastor, this faith leader in the community, is the one who's kind of spearheading everything that's happening with ICE in that same community, right? And like, like, that, it's like, I saw, like, people with microphones saying, like, how dare you be a faith leader and do this? Like, this is a double life, this is a conflict of interest, like, all that. Like, to me, like, that's the crux of the issue, right? And that is maybe why they felt justified entering in, because it was very much about this pastor in particular, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, my two cents on it is that I think maybe there was, it is more similar to that.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah.
That scenario you're describing than just protesting the government.
Mm. Yeah, I had not seen those particular videos, so that's, mm-hmm. that's very helpful, and I think that context is really useful, right? Because I think ultimately when I'm thinking about protest, I try to think about, okay, we want to disrupt, but we want to mm-hmm. disrupt the people who have the power to make a change, right? Right. Like, you know, my disruption of people who are powerless doesn't do any good.
Right.
You know, and I'm thinking back to, like, we were in, what city is that? Memphis. And we went to the National Civil Rights Museum, and we're learning about the bus boycott of Selma, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what the bus boycott did is it disrupted power for the people who were making money off the buses, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's who it hurt.
Right.
And how they did that was by caring for one another and creating their own, you know, carpool systems and mm-hmm. all this other stuff. That was really incredible. It went on for, I think, nearly a year.
Yeah.
And, you know, so they were willing to disrupt their own lives
mm-hmm.
In order to make sure that it was disrupting the right people. I think, and this is not even just necessarily about this protest today, I think protests today in general, right, like just a broad brush protests, often are not willing to disrupt our own lives
mm-hmm.
to really make a difference, right? Like,
yeah.
The bus boycott was almost a year before they got anything,
mm-hmm.
and it was still a long way to go, right?
Yeah.
But they got that one thing. And, like, you know, the No Kinks protest, for example, I think that's great that people go out, but it's like an afternoon. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, you know.
Yeah. It's an afternoon unless you get shot with rubber bullets or pepper spray.
Sure.
And, like, you know, like, there are some stakes to that.
I'm not saying there are no stakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like there are no stakes, but, like,
yeah.
You know, I have not seen in the last 20 years an organized movement. I mean, maybe the what was the thing on Wall Street? The not no what you know what I'm talking about.
On Wall Street?
Yeah, it was the protest on Wall Street where they, like, camped out on Wall Street, and it was back in, like, the mid 2000s around the 08 crisis.
All right. I was 18 and not paying attention, so.
Fair enough. So there was something in Wall Street. Well, mm-hmm. history will reveal itself. But
somebody can Google it.
Yeah. There was a and, like, it was like this organized group of people who all were camping out in this park near Wall Street. And, like, the problem that they had was that there was no clear vocal leader, right? There
mm-hmm.
wasn't a Martin Luther King Jr. We're mm-hmm. just passing Martin Luther King Jr. Day here, right? There wasn't a clear leader who's saying, this is what we're about and this is what we're for. They were so broadly trying to let everybody be about everything that they were about nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so nothing got accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of like, as I've been watching this from the outside, that has felt like the thrust of a lot of our efforts to protest for change, is that we're so about everything that we're not about anything. Like, we can't
yeah.
find that thing to get everybody behind, like, this is the thing.
Yeah.
This is what we have to be about. And I think this protest, right, the one that we're talking about here, with the one coming into the church in Minnesota, I think this one at least gets closer to that, right,
mm-hmm.
as you're describing it. Like, that at least this leader, we think this is a conflict of interest for you to be
mm-hmm.
a pastor in this church, and to be holding this particular
right.
Now, I think the challenge for that stance is that they are approaching that without being members of that congregation.
Sure. Do we know that nobody involved was a member of the congregation?
I don't. I have no idea who the members of the protest were. The leaders of the protest were not.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, one leader was described as a reverend faith leader of another community.
Mm-hmm.
One was a leader in the Black Lives Matter of Minneapolis or Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the exact which M that stood
yeah.
for. Right. So, I mean, there were known people in the community who have led movements like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that no members of the congregation were part of the protest.
Yeah.
I don't. Maybe there are members of the congregation who stood up, heard them say this, and joined them. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Right. But it is a challenge. Like, for that congregation, that might not be a conflict of interest, right? I might
see
that as a huge conflict of interest.
Right.
But, like, I see a lot of things that, like, you know, other faiths would do as a conflict of interest,
mm-hmm.
too. And I think that, you know, that's a piece of what the argument is here, is both sides claim free speech as the reason
mm-hmm.
that they shouldn't be allowed in there and as the reason that they should be allowed in there. And that's
messy, isn't it?
Yeah,
like,
that's like...
What do you do with that?
And free speech is not in the Bible, just to be clear.
Right.
Free speech
is not
a biblical
principle.
This
is very much not free speech in biblical times, right?
Yeah.
Like, you...
So I guess maybe this is just us talking. Like, what Trump's free speech, or not what Trump's...
Let's not use that word.
Which element of free speech wins?
Yeah.
When they go head to head, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because there's the element of free speech that says you can't infringe on somebody's right to practice their religious freedom.
Right.
Right. So I have the right to gather with my religion and not be infringed in that.
Mm-hmm.
And you theoretically have the right to express your opinions and to voice his opinions. However, the church is also private property. And so the church has the right to throw your butt out if you're expressing opinions that they don't want to listen to. Right. You're not in the public commons. You're in a private establishment. Yeah. Like it's really messy. It's really complex. And so I think maybe even the better argument about whether not the better question for us to get into is whether or not they were right or wrong, because it happened. Right. I think the better question is how should a congregation respond if this happens to you? Because I don't think just being angry about it and saying like they shouldn't have come in here, like I don't think that's the right response.
Right.
So how should we respond? Jesus turns over the tables. What should we be doing?
I mean, if somebody busted up in Lord of Life saying that you were heading an ICE field office, I'd have some questions for you. Like, I'd have some follow-up. Like, hey, we need to talk, man.
Well, let's assume that you know me, right? And so you know that either is or is not true.
Right. Maybe, unless this is, like, a secretive thing for you, right? Like, I don't know how common knowledge this was for this guy, right? Okay. Like, did his congregation know that he did this as well?
But so, regardless, how should we respond?
Yeah. I mean,
do we throw them out? Do we say this is private property? You don't have a right to do this here. Do we invite them in and say, yeah, let's have a conversation? Like,
I think the second would definitely be the more constructive path.
Yeah.
It's probably the harder one to figure out in the moment, when emotions are high, or even not in the moment. It's the harder path, but probably the better one, right? Yeah.
Jesus almost always tells us to take the harder path, which is a real
downer.
Like, come on, Jesus. Just once? Can I get the easy one? Like, is that too much to ask?
No. Cliff notes, no.
No, I cannot, or no, it's not too much to ask.
It is too much to ask. No, you cannot.
Okay. Yeah, I have had a pastor, a friend of mine who's up, he's not in Minneapolis, but he's in the greater Midwest northern area, right?
Way up there.
Yeah. I forget if he's in Minnesota or if he's in Wisconsin. He's somewhere up there.
They're the same.
I would say we made so many enemies, but that would involve us having that many listeners to be angry about it.
Yeah.
But he was reflecting on this and saying, like, I don't, as a pastor, I don't know what I would do in this situation. But his hope was, and I think this is helpful, his hope would be, can we have a conversation? Like, can I find whoever's leading this protest and say, we're in the middle of worship service. I understand that you're angry, and I want to have a conversation with you. Can we set time?
Yeah.
Can we meet, the fellowship hall? Can we meet in the fellowship hall after this? Can I come with you and do, like, these people do not have anything to do with what you're upset about. Can we talk about this? Can we have that and make that space to have that? And I think that is probably aligned with what Jesus would want.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Seems like it.
But I agree. I think that's really, really hard to do. And this is probably true regardless of where we're at. Like, I mean, we could even make this more personal, right? What if we're in our own home and someone we invite into our home is spouting off, ideology that we don't agree with, right? Like, do we just kick them out and say, you're not allowed to say that in our home? Or do we have a conversation and say, like, hey, I hear you're really upset about this. Like, can we talk about why I'm uncomfortable with this? And, like, I think those are really hard things for us to do.
Yeah, they are.
And I think culturally our instinct is to just say, get them out.
Yeah.
In fact, I can even remember this one time. This was at Lord of Life. This was, it was post-COVID. So it was after Pastor Gary had retired. Because I think I was solo at the time. I think I was the only pastor in the building. And a woman came in to get assistance. One of our pastor's discretionary fund assistants getting a rent check or something like that. And so I was talking to her in the welcome center as she was waiting for the check to be ready. And she just started going off about, I think it was about immigration, is my recollection, and talking about populations of people from Haiti in particular, and accusing the people of Haiti of being criminals and vagrants and all this other stuff. And I have been to Haiti, and I know people in Haiti, and I have relationships there and continue to have relationships there. And so I just asked her to stop. I was like, listen, you can have whatever opinions you want, but I need you not to talk about people like that. This is this place where we don't talk like that.
Right.
And she was incredibly offended, took her rent check. It was incredibly offended.
Not that offended.
and saying, like, I thought we were in a free country. I was like, you can say whatever you want outside of this building.
Right.
But in this building, we can't talk like that.
Yeah.
And eventually had to ask her to leave. Right. I was like, you have your check. Like, we've provided the assistance we said we were going to provide. I have to ask you to leave. Like, if you're going to continue to talk like this, I have to ask you to leave. And that, I don't know if that was right in that moment, but I know that I didn't want to let her keep talking about people like that either.
Yeah.
And maybe that was me reacting to my own emotionality in the minute. But that line is just super blurry. And I think we have to be willing to, acknowledge the messiness of that.
Yeah. I do think that there's a difference when you are drawing a line to like defend somebody who is marginalized in some way versus when you're just shutting down maybe conflicting opinions or challenging opinions, right? Like those are two kind of different things. So I think it's not always wrong to draw a, or maybe it's frequently right to draw a line with a stance of protecting people that could benefit from protecting.
Yeah, I can hear that. So I think, I don't know if we need to make a final judgment call, but I think where I'm landing on this is that I would hope that I would respond differently than the church did in the moment. Mm-hmm. I think I would hope that if I were in the leadership position that I would respond with a level of curiosity and a level of willingness to enter into a conversation if this happened to me. I would hope that. I also think the protesters shouldn't have been in there. I think that as protesters, we should be looking for other places.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying that's where I'm at. If we're...
That's fair enough. I mean, I don't like the way that it happened. You know, like, I'll freely admit that it's an uncomfortable thought. I don't know that, like... I don't think of that and think, you know, like
that's it. Yeah.
It did it. You know, we landed on it. I mean, not we. I wasn't involved, but like
we,
you know,
culturally,
like, yeah, this is really moving the needle forward.
Yeah.
In a way that I like to see, you know. But I don't know that I am in a place where I feel like I can condemn it either. You know, like I think
that's fair.
I see some of the validity to it, right?
Yeah.
With the detail of it being, I think, mostly about the pastor's like double involvement, perceived double involvement.
Yeah.
So,
and I think that's perfectly reasonable. And if I had a conversation with the leaders of this particular protest, I might land in a different place and say, yep, you absolutely should have done what you wanted. I don't know what they were thinking. And so I think my general stance is like, hey, if we're protesting something, sanctuaries, right? Mm-hmm. There should be a place. And I think sanctuary is the right term for it, right? There should be a sanctuary for all of us where we can go that is free of that.
Yeah.
Right? For that, but for a moment, we step into whatever else we need to step into. Mm-hmm. And whether that's a Christian sanctuary, a Lutheran sanctuary, a Baptist sanctuary. This is a Southern Baptist church. I don't think I said that earlier, right? A Baptist sanctuary. Whether this was a Jewish synagogue or a Hindu temple, right? Like, there should be places where we can go free of that.
Yep.
And maybe the minute we walk out the door, because that's the reality, right? The minute you walk out the
Fair
door,
game.
You're back in the world, right? Like maybe that's where it is. But
I
without having further conversation with them, I think that's what I would hope for. So I'd hope I'd respond better than this church did. And I would wish that we didn't feel like we needed to come to that place.
Right.
And maybe what's behind that is that I wish that we didn't have pastors who were also serving as field office commanders.
I know, like that's part of the issue, right?
Like, but I guess like... I don't know anything about this guy. And so, you know, Luther's explanation of the eighth commandment encourages me to think the best of my neighbor until I have evidence to the contrary, right? Mm-hmm. To always assume the best. And I don't have evidence that he is a corrupt ICE agent I don't know. There are good people working in ICE, even in the midst of ICE doing some really horrible things right now.
Yeah.
There are still good people in ICE. And there were good people who were in ICE before this, right? Mm-hmm. ICE was not always this. And
yeah.
It's too easy for me to slip into demonizing someone based on the actions of one, or demonizing a group based on the actions of one. And so I'm in my own journey, I'm trying to be really careful about not doing that.
Yeah.
Moment of confession.
Do we need music? Usher. Yeah, we can play Usher in the background.
What other confession music would you have?
I don't know. Confessions part one or part two?
Is there a difference? I don't know.
There is, yeah.
Is one better?
The subject matter is different.
Okay, well, the better subject matter. That's the one. That's
okay.
All right, anything else that you got for us today? Huh?
Still raining out there.
We don't know. We're in a room. We got no windows in here. It could be raining.
I'm guessing. Feels like it's raining out there.
It's raining in my soul.
Right.
The rain is with me everywhere I go.
Cue outro music.
All right. Well, hey, if you enjoyed this episode, you can find all of our stuff at beyondsidepodcast.com. Send us an email. Tell us where you would want to protest. What's your dream protest?
Your
dream protest destination.
Ooh.
I want to protest in Bali. That sounds great.
That sounds amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some beach that needs saving over there. But send it to us at beyondsidepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.